Welcome to episode 11 of Pandemic Preparedness here at biodefense.com. I'm recording this on the day that Ebola was confirmed in the United States in that patient in Dallas. That just happened a few hours ago as I'm recording this. So now, of course, all those people who were on the internet saying, oh, it'll never come to America, it's an Africa thing, I've heard that comment. People saying, this is all fear-mongering, you don't need to prepare. The president said it'll never come to America. The CDC said, it'll never be in America. Well, I hate to say it, but I told you so. It's here now, and even if they get this patient contained, what about the next patient? You know, this guy walked right into America, actually flew in, right through the airports, right into taxi cabs, right into and out of hospitals. He was interacting with all kinds of people in society as he was carrying Ebola for 10 full days on the streets of Dallas, Texas, before he was diagnosed and isolated. So, you know, it raises the obvious questions. Were the hospital staff infected? You know, what about the doctors? What about the nurses there, the radiologists perhaps, the other people that are involved there, hospital staff? What about family, friends, coworkers? What about the paramedic who took him to the hospital? Is the paramedic infected now? What about all the people that were on the airplane that flew the guy into the United States? What about all the people in the airport? Now, of course, the CDC always says, well, don't worry. Don't worry, this doesn't spread except by direct contact of body fluids. But, of course, that is a lie. It can spread in the air over short distances on aerosols. If someone sneezes, for example, and they have particles of fluid in the air, that those can carry Ebola. They can infect or contaminate surfaces where other people can come along and touch those surfaces, and then they can be infected with Ebola, because Ebola can survive for some time out in the open air. So the CDC is giving people just the worst disinfo on this for whatever reason. It's almost like they don't want people to be safe from Ebola. It's almost like they want the biggest infection rates possible. And of course, today the stock price of Tecmira, the vaccine manufacturer that, they're the retroviral drug manufacturer that's been invested in by Monsanto, well, yeah, their stock price shot up 27% because there's always money to be made by the vaccine industry from the spread of a viral pandemic. And so the CDC is telling people, well, all you really need to do is wash your hands. Yep, just wash your hands, wait around for a vaccine, but my God, don't you dare take colloidal silver. Don't you dare take medicinal herbs or nutritional therapies. I mean, don't boost your immune system. No, that would be foolish, they say. You should wash your hands, you know, with soap. Wash your hands and wait for a vaccine. That is the official advice of the United States government, which at this point it seems fairly obvious that they are trying to get as many people killed as possible. So this episode of Pandemic Preparedness is about what you can do to prepare for the Ebola outbreak sweeping through America. This is a special episode just for Americans, or actually it should include also Canadians, people in North America. And, of course, once it's in North America, if it's actually spreading and it's not contained, then it's going to be in Mexico. And if it's in Mexico, it's going to be in Central America and El Salvador and South America. It's going to make its way through all these nations, Peru, Ecuador, Bolivia, Brazil, Venezuela, Argentina, you name it. It's going to sweep through the continent if it starts to spread uncontained. So let's, of course, hope that this never happens. But yet there's already a guy in Dallas confirmed to have carried Ebola into the country, and they don't know how he got in, and they have no protections against any other person like him bringing it in. There's no defense whatsoever. There's no medical screening at the airport. There's no magical device that can, where they can shine a light on you and detect whether you have Ebola. It doesn't exist. So this can spread very, very easily. And if, think about this, if the CDC estimates of this disease spreading in Africa are anywhere close to being true, where they've predicted 1.4 million infections by January 2015, then the question remains, how could they possibly contain it from that point? How do you ever stop it from getting into European cities or North American cities or Mexico or Central America? How can you stop it? If you've got a million people infected in Africa, how can you possibly stop it? Well, apparently you can't, because, I don't know, Ebola sent 3,000 soldiers over there while the commercial airlines were flying infected Ebola patients back over here. So I don't know what good these 3,000 soldiers are doing over there when the Ebola is over here and it can walk right across the border, and you can't fight Ebola with bullets anyway. And what are they building? 17 tents with hospital beds? I mean, they're really just tents with cots. You know, I don't know how that is supposed to stop Ebola when the projected numbers are 1.4 million. Are they going to build, you know, 100,000 hospital tents over there? I kind of doubt it. So the risk of this coming to America seems to be now much greater today than in any of the previous recordings that I've done for this course. But it's worth noting that I warned about this. So you might want to go back and actually review some of the earlier chapters of this course here on biodefense.com and listen to what I talked about even before it was ever confirmed in America, because it wasn't difficult to see this possibility coming. I actually believed, I thought that it would take until 2015 actually to see it in America at all. But this has happened much earlier than I estimated. However, it is likely that they're going to be able to contain this one infection. But again, what about the next person and the person after that and the person after that? If you don't close down the vectors of infection, which right now is air travel, then you're never going to really be able to stop the infections from coming in. And yeah, they might get lucky with this guy and be able to contain him and everybody that he came into contact with for 21 days and shut it down and contain it that way. But they may not be so lucky with the next person who walks in with an Ebola infection. Or maybe somebody fails to get diagnosed at all. There might be people who are infected with Ebola right now, walking around Los Angeles or New York City, who think they just have a cold. And they're still showing up at work. Maybe they work at the sandwich shop at the local grocery store. They need the hours, they need the paycheck, because everything's more expensive. Food's going up in price, in case you haven't noticed. And so they're sneezing all over everybody's sandwiches there at the grocery store. And, you know, I've seen this, I'm sure you've seen this too. People who should go home because they're too sick to be handling other people's food, but they need the hours, they need the money, so they're there. So maybe at the end of the day, 50 people go home with Ebola-infected sandwiches. You know, this is not an outlandish scenario. This can happen. And it may have already happened, in fact, because the incubation time on this is up to 3 weeks. So there might be tens or hundreds of people right now who have been exposed, possibly infected with Ebola, who are carrying it right now, replicating it in their bodies right now, who have absolutely no idea that this is going on. This is how Ebola spreads. It's a stealth virus, really. Obviously, you know, it doesn't announce its presence. You have to figure it out after the fact. So now what we're getting from the CDC and from the U.S. government is more delusional denials. The first denials were, oh, don't worry, Ebola will never come to this country. You're going to be fine. Don't worry and don't panic, right? That was the advice. So now it's here. So we know all the other stuff they told us was total BS. So it's here now, and they didn't stop it. And they didn't warn anybody. And so now they've come up with a new set of lies, which is, oh, don't worry, we have it under control. It's not going to spread. They say it doesn't even spread through the air, even though, of course, it can. But they're lying to people and saying, don't worry, don't panic, we have it all under control, which is why it showed up without their knowledge. Surprise, Ebola in Dallas. Yeah, if they had it under control, I don't think we would have Ebola in Dallas, would we? If they had it under control, we wouldn't have Ebola in America at all. So they don't have it under control, but they're trying to convince the public to keep it under control so that people don't freak out and panic. Because, my God, the worst thing to do in America, the greatest sin in Western culture today, is to tell the public the truth about anything. because the public can't handle the truth about anything, and certainly not the truth about a viral pandemic or the coming medical martial law quarantines, the shortage of food and medical supplies, and the kind of crisis that this nation would go through if an Ebola outbreak really began to spread. I mean, my God, you can't tell the public this information, says the mainstream media, because people would freak out. Yeah, of course people would freak out because they've been told year after year after year to not prepare for anything. They've been told the government will take care of you. They've been told vaccines are safe and never have any negative side effects, and you should put all your faith in the vaccine industry to keep you healthy. They've been told, they've been lied to about natural cures and told that there's no such thing as a natural medicine and that nutrition is worthless and vitamin pills are dangerous and all these other lies that people have been told over the years. So, of course, the population is completely unprepared. They've been told, oh, you shouldn't have a home garden. In fact, we might arrest you if you have a home garden. Just ask Julie Bass up in Oak Park, Michigan. She was facing jail time for having her home garden. People have been dissuaded from growing their own food or even contributing to local communities with real food like raw milk. And so we have a nation now of people who have been completely trained to be completely unprepared. And then we have a government that continues to lie to them about what they need to be doing right now. And believe me, this same government has been preparing behind the scenes for the last several years. They've had this patent since 2010 on this Ebola virus. They actually own the patent. I've printed the patent number on naturalnews.com. You can look it up there if you want. They've had this strain of Ebola in the CDC freezer since 2007. And we've had scientists, genetic engineering scientists, in the United States, two that I can think of right now that have been openly calling for Ebola to be released as a bioweapon to wipe out most of the population. One of them actually worked at the University of Austin in Texas. And he said that he wanted Ebola to wipe out the population, and that he was inspiring a lot of students to take on that idea. And then there was another scientist who was recently caught openly laughing and joking about how they should use a genetically engineered virus to cull the human population by about 25%. And this guy worked on Ebola. So, hey, look at the history here. You got all these crazy mad scientists, genetic engineering Franken-scientists, who are convinced that there are too many people in the world, and they want to release a virus to kill off as many people as possible as a way, in their own words, to kind of weed out the human population. That's what they're into. It's a sick, demented, anti-humanitarian type of philosophy, but that's very common in the sciences. And so every time that I see the CDC doing something like saying, oh, just wash your hands, don't boost your immune system, no, don't take colloidal silver, that's dangerous. Every time I see that, I'm thinking to myself, are these people actually trying to get the public killed? Because that seems to be the philosophy of many of these so-called top scientists today. It's like they hate humanity. They want to kill as many people as possible. So you got to wonder. I mean, like, here's an important question. This guy that's been said to have Ebola in Dallas, Texas, well, as of this particular moment, well, he has not been identified. How do we know he's even real? How do we know he even exists? Maybe they'll release his name later and answer that question. But as of right now, we don't know that he even exists. We don't know that this is even real. Or maybe he was put there on purpose in order to spread Ebola in America. I mean, who knows? There's all kinds of crazy scientists out there who want to kill human populations. So they're capable of all kinds of things. Now, getting down to practical matters, what you need to know about an Ebola outbreak in America is that everything you have now witnessed in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea is a test case for what they're going to do in America. So, take my word on this. Lots of people don't believe what I say the first time I publish it because they didn't see it on CNN, so they say it couldn't be true. And then later on they come and say, oh my God, the health ranger was right. We should have listened earlier, so I'm asking you to listen now. Everything that you're seeing in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and New Guinea, or not New Guinea, but Guinea, will be used in America during a pandemic outbreak. So what are you seeing in Sierra Leone? What are you seeing in Liberia? Well, some interesting things. Medical martial law being one of the most important things. Medical martial law, right? The government of Liberia ordered the entire country shut down for 3 days. And they went door to door with, quote, medical staff, looking for Ebola patients who were then forcibly removed from those homes. So shut down the whole country, martial law, for 3 days. And they went door to door looking for Ebola patients. Now, wow, how many civil rights does that violate in America? It doesn't even matter because they're going to declare a national emergency and they're going to suspend all your constitutional rights anyway. So they're going to kick in doors and go door to door, do whatever they want in America as well. And they're just going to say it's for national security. You know, it's to fight the disease. And hey, they may be right. You know, that may be the only way to contain it. But definitely don't expect to have any constitutional rights during this process. Now, as the country was shut down for 3 days, what happened? Well, obviously, nobody went to work. So, of course, the entire economy is crashing. The Washington Post even did an article on this talking about how the economy of Liberia is descending into, what do they call it, a hellish implosion or something? Or economic hell. That's the term they used. Descending into economic hell. That's the Washington Post headline. They usually don't use terms like that in their headlines, but this is obviously a very severe case. So, since these nobody went to work for 3 days, and then all of a sudden, no transactions took place for 3 days. People couldn't make money to buy the food that they needed to live on, and many people in Liberia are living day to day. They actually spend that day what they earned that day. Now, in America, we don't think like this, but I've lived in South America, and I've seen that in action. Even in Ecuador, there were many people who would buy, for example, one pharmaceutical pill at a time. The local pharmacies sell individual pills. People who would buy one serving of a food staple to make a meal, just one meal at a time. It'll stock up the way Americans go to Costco, load up the SUV with like three weeks worth of food. No, in South America, in Africa, in many of these nations, people are living literally day to day. So they could not support themselves, and now they have an economic implosion taking place. They've also got problems with now farmers are afraid to go out into the fields and work the fields and harvest the food. Because now Ebola is spreading, and they want to stay home and not risk being out interacting with other people. So now the food that was growing is not being harvested, is rotting in the fields. And of course then food deliveries are halted for the simple reason that the guys driving the delivery trucks, they're not stupid. They don't want to drive into an infected zone to deliver food, so they're refusing to go there. So food deliveries are halted, and food harvesting is halted, and the economy is basically crashing. And so, of course, people are beginning to starve. Food prices are skyrocketing. Food is available in the black market at escalated prices, and the government can't keep up with all these problems at once. At the same time that it's fighting Ebola, it's trying to supply food and water, basic emergency services, basic local police, law enforcement type of protective services, and so on. It's just not working. The whole thing's falling apart. Now let's move over to Sierra Leone. Now Sierra Leone, and most Americans are not aware of this at all, because it hasn't been talked about in the mainstream media like a lot of things that are true. And Sierra Leone has declared quarantines for about 2 million people in that country. The government came in and said, this is now a quarantine zone, and they shut down all the roads, all the ways in and out of these zones, and there are about 2 million people inside these zones. Now, I've called these death traps because there are really only a couple of ways to get out of a quarantine zone. One is if you, or I should say to survive one of these quarantine zones. to survive it, you either have to become immune or dead. Because you can't get out on foot, you'll be arrested or even shot. And you can't get out in a vehicle, all the roads are shut down. You can't get out on mass transportation, you know, trains or planes or anything like that, because they're all controlled and shut down by the government. Now, the government of Sierra Leone says that they will keep this quarantine in place indefinitely until such time as, in their own words, the chain of transmission is halted. Really, the chain of transmission is halted? How is it going to halt itself? It's as if they have a magical wand and they are thinking that they can wave this wand around and say, hocus pocus, abracadabra, Ebola stop transmitting now, and that the virus will just magically stop transmitting. It doesn't work that way. You don't just break the chain of transmission by wishing it so. What they're really doing is creating quarantine zones to sacrifice those areas for the protection of the rest of the country. So they are expecting about a 50% fatality rate among the people trapped in those quarantine areas. And this figure may actually be higher. I've heard estimates as high as 70%, which is probably happening because there is mass starvation taking place. The food deliveries, again, are not being made to the quarantine zones. Almost no one is allowed in or out. The government can't keep up with the demand. So now you've got starving populations who have then weakened immune systems, increased immune vulnerability to Ebola infections, which may further multiply the transmission rates and increase the fatality rates of the disease at the same time. That's what's happening in Sierra Leone. Now, remember when I said a few minutes ago, everything that you're seeing happening in Liberia or Sierra Leone will also be used in the United States if an outbreak continues to expand in an uncontrolled manner. So what is uncontrolled? It means the numbers are increasing exponentially, and that the government workers or CDC people, doctors, and so on are not able to contain it. Now, there was a study conducted at the University of Arizona, or Arizona State University, I believe, that found that for every one infection of Ebola across these three countries, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea, it resulted in an additional 1.4 to 1.7 infections. This is an exponential infection rate. So one infection results in, again, up to 1.7 new infections. If you compound this at a rapid rate, and Ebola can spread in a matter of 1 to 3 weeks very easily, then you begin to get this explosion of infections, which the CDC actually modeled in its software models, and that's how the CDC arrived at the estimate that 1.4 million people would be infected by the end of January 2015 if nothing was done to stop the current trends, the current patterns of escalation. Now, to understand this idea of compounding, it goes back to that old riddle. I don't remember the exact story, but there was a king, and he told one of the servants that he could have anything he wanted as a reward for some good deed he did. I don't remember the whole story, but the servant said, here's a checkerboard, and I want one grain of, let's say, wheat. Sometimes the story is told with like one copper coin or something on the first square, and then I want you to double that on the second square, so that's two grains on the second square, and then double it again on the third square, so that's four, and then eight, and then 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 10, 24, 20, 48, 40, 96, and so on. And so if you go through all the squares of the checkerboard, doubling it every time, the question is, how many grains of wheat or gold coins or whatever you're using would the king need to give this person on the last square? And the answer becomes some extraordinary number larger than all the grains of wheat that could fit on the planet or something. It's a very big number. Why? Because we're talking about an exponential increase, or in this case, a doubling with every, quote, transmission. Every next step is a doubling. Well, with Ebola, every next step is not quite doubling. It's not 1 to 2. It's 1 to 1.7 on the high end, or 1 to 1.4 on the low end. But even at that slightly lower number, the exponential explosion mathematically can happen very, very quickly. And that's how you get to 1.4 million people infected by the end of January 2015. So, if you understand the mathematics of viral transmission, and you understand, you know, compounding interests, which is essentially the same mathematical model as what we're dealing with here, then you can understand that if this begins to get loose in the United States, in a major U.S. city, let's take Houston as an example. It's close to Dallas, where we already have Ebola. If there's an outbreak in Houston, how quickly would this spread, and how quickly would it get beyond containment? That's the key question. Now, I don't have a hard answer for this. I don't think anybody does. I think the CDC can very relatively easily contain an Ebola outbreak that's among, let's say, a dozen people. They might even be able to contain it if it's, say, 100 people. But if that number grows substantially larger than it seems, just by thinking about this, that it would be increasingly impossible for the CDC to contain an outbreak that had reached, let's say, 500 people or 1,000 people. It seems like once it goes past 1,000 people, you are into a very dangerous explosion outbreak that may not be able to be contained at all. And I'm wondering, at what point does the United States government slap down a quarantine on a city? So, again, let's take Houston. Let's say there were 1,000 patients showing up in local hospitals in Houston with symptoms of Ebola. What should the United States government do in that scenario? Most people who don't live in Houston would agree that the government should probably quarantine Houston, right? I can't disagree with that either. Even if I lived in Houston, I couldn't disagree with it, because the government is going to have to try to isolate this in order to save other lives in other cities. Now, I've seen some people overreacting right now online, saying because this one guy is in Dallas with Ebola, that they should quarantine Dallas. Now, can you imagine? Can you imagine quarantine, shutting down the Dallas airport? Would be an economic nightmare, a business continuity nightmare, just because of one guy. So then they're not going to do it for one infection, or even 10, maybe not even 100. But you get across 1,000 infections, would they shut down a city of millions of people because of 1,000 infections there? Maybe they would. I can't say what that threshold is. I don't know that anyone knows the answer, but it could be invoked at any time if the government sees that this is beginning to spread beyond control. They will try to lock down that city. But will they already be too late by the time they're willing to make that decision, with all the social and political costs that go along with it? If you've got 1,000 people infected in Houston and they lock down the city, they put in a quarantine, isn't it likely that you probably got a few dozen people infected in New Orleans, or Dallas-Fort Worth, or Austin, Texas, San Antonio? I mean, come on, Houston is connected to a lot of other cities by road, by rail, by air, by Greyhound bus, if you will, by train even. So by the time you've locked down one city, there's probably an outbreak in other nearby cities. Or maybe there's a flight from Houston to L.A., and then you've got an infected person running around LAX, drooling all over the luggage carts, spreading Ebola there in LA. Now what do you do? How do you control little outbreaks that are happening in multiple cities at multiple locations? The CDC only has so many people. The government only has so many FEMA agents. And let's face it, they're kind of slow to react to things. I mean, the CDC, it seems to be on the ball at the moment. But overall, Department of Homeland Security, DHS, I mean, come on, this is not the A-team of solving problems. So if this begins to grow with any real kind of momentum or acceleration, it seems extremely unlikely that the United States government is going to be able to really do that much about it. Now, once it gets out of control, if indeed this happens, although we hope and pray it never does, but if it gets out of control and it's uncontained, then the national strategy shifts into an entirely different phase, which is, okay, it's not going to be contained. And by the way, this is the phase that Africa is in right now. It's not being contained. They're in a different phase, which is to slow the transmission and try to provide supportive care so that more people can survive the infection. Now, at this point, any government that has made this decision to say we can't contain it, they've already written off about 50% of the population, because that's the current fatality rate, actually 50 to maybe 70%, depending on what numbers you believe out there. Now, these viral transmissions tend to become slightly less fatal and more transmissive as they mutate in the wild. So it is possible that Ebola may actually reduce its fatality rate to 45%, 40%, even 30%, 20%. It could become a lot less fatal, but a lot more contagious at the same time. And in fact, a more, quote, successful viral pandemic is one that has a lower mortality rate, but a higher transmission rate, so that it can be carried and spread by more people who stay alive longer because they're not dying, because the fatality rate is lower. This is influenza, for example, the common cold, the flu. Why is it so successful as a viral pandemic? Why does it spread so easily? Because it doesn't kill so many people. The people stay alive and they go to work at your workplace and they sneeze all over everything and they spread the virus. So that is the direction that these things tend to mutate over time. But there's no guarantee that Ebola will move in that direction. That just tends to be, that's a general trend among viral pandemics. Now, by the way, just as a side note on this, a virus that has a very high mortality rate tends to be easier to contain. So if Ebola goes to 70%, 80%, 90% fatality rates, it will actually be much easier to contain because it kills its hosts so completely, so quickly, that they don't have time to carry it and spread it to very many other people. So in a sense, the CDC might even say this, that it would be easier to contain if it had a much higher mortality rate. But these are just some of the dynamics that you need to keep in mind as this possibly begins to spread. Now, my current prediction, and this is a tough one because these things are just wild. I didn't predict it would be in America this quickly. But my current prediction is that they will keep this particular individual. This won't be a big outbreak. This will be contained. That's my belief, because I think the U.S. has the ability to track the transmission of this and to isolate anyone who was in contact with this person. So this is not going to get out of control. What I'm worried about is future people, more people, even people walking in across the southern border, which is completely unprotected. I'm really concerned. I think that Mexico City could become very easily infected. And if it spreads in Mexico City, then it's going to walk right across the border into the United States. And one of my great concerns in all of this is that as this begins to spread, or there are more cases that are diagnosed in the United States, or it walks across the border, and then we have maybe regional or local outbreaks, that the U.S. government will just continue to lie to the public. It's that our government has become so used to just lying all the time about everything that matters that they are incapable of telling the truth. So we have, for example, an economic crisis headed our way because of this massive national debt, which is now over $17 trillion. There's no way we're going to be able to pay this back. Much of our debt is held by nations like China and Japan, which could begin to sell our debt and therefore crash the value of that debt at any time and make it impossible for the United States to be able to borrow from other nations with any kind of a credit rating, which means we wouldn't be able to borrow affordably at low interest rates. This is never explained to the public by the government itself. They're just in a state of denial. They say, well, what debt? Or national debt doesn't matter. Or they even say, especially during election times, they say, well, we did balance the budget. What are you talking about? It's balanced. It's like they can't do math, but neither can many of the voters. So it seems to they seem to be able to get away with it. Well, the government will just routinely lie to people about things that really matter. Some of the other big lies out there are, oh, vaccines are safe. Mercury is safe to be injected into pregnant women in the form of a vaccine. It's harmless, no problem whatsoever. No, children are never damaged by vaccines. Of course, it's all a complete lie because we do have the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which has paid out millions of dollars in settlements to children who were provably damaged by vaccines. They actually admit that vaccines do damage children in that court. But it's a secret court, and you can't go through a regular court system to claim compensation for your child being harmed or even killed by a vaccine. So this is another big medical lie by the United States government. But there are many, many lies that are out there. And, you know, we don't have time to go through them all, obviously. But the point is you can't trust the government to tell you the truth about what's happening with Ebola or any kind of a viral pandemic. I mean, think about it. If they told people the truth, most Americans would panic. They would absolutely freak out. They would dial 911 and request help. They would show up at their doctor's office and ask for help. The Obamacare system is about to crash and burn the way it is right now. It certainly can't handle a massive influx of millions of patients showing up and demanding some kind of care for a possible pandemic that might be spreading out there in the wild. So the government is not about to actually start admitting the truth about any of this stuff. I mean, think about it. If there were a giant asteroid heading for our planet that was certain to strike, I don't know, the Atlantic Ocean and create a massive tidal wave and block out the sun for 3 years, I'm talking about like an extinction level meteor strike, do you think the government would tell you? Of course not, because there's nothing you can do, and there's nothing they can do. You know, if the Yellowstone caldera were about to erupt, as it does every 600,000 years or so, which would blanket the entire Midwest breadbasket region of America with ash, volcanic ash, and it would also basically cause food crops to fail all around the planet for 2 to 10 years because it would block out the sun. And it would cause a mass extinction of most of humanity and many animals and many plant species at the same time. Do you think the government would give you warning that that's going to happen? No, of course not. Why? Because there's nothing you can do about it. And there's nothing they can do about it. No, all they do is they call their best friends and they gather in their little bunkers. Well, big bunkers, actually, big government bunkers. And then they let everybody else discover it as a surprise. So if there's anything that's headed our way, I don't care if it's a solar flare or, you know, a giant space rock or the massive Yellowstone volcano, which is actually the chances of Yellowstone erupting anytime soon are very, very slim. So don't think, I'm not saying that that's a high risk item at this moment. It isn't. But if any of these things were going to happen and the government had some kind of advance notice, they would not tell you because there's no reason for them to do so. They can't help everyone. 300 million people in America and about 290 million of them are completely unprepared. Probably about half the population barely has the physical fitness to walk across the parking lot to get to the Walmart pharmacy. You know, many of these people are not going to be capable of making it through any kind of a trying time or a preparedness or a survival scenario. So the government pretty much has written those people off and said to themselves, you know, we might as well not even say anything because there's nothing these people can do. There's nothing we can do. We just have to save some part of humanity in the government bunkers and caves, which they have, and then repopulate the planet after the disaster happens. That is in the plans. That's why they have the survival seed bank. You know, this is why they have the underground caves with really over a decade of food for a certain number of selected people. The government has plans, in other words, to survive almost anything. And they've thought of all kinds of crazy scenarios, from alien invasions to earth changes and all kinds of things. They've got plans to survive all these things, but you can bet that they're not including you in those plans. So unless you already have one of those free passes to the government's underground bunkers, and some of you listening may actually have that pass for all I know, but most of us don't. I sure don't. So if you don't have that pass, well, you got to create your own plan. You got to be able to survive with just you and your family members, maybe your neighbors. Maybe you've got some local support structure, maybe a church that's into preparedness or some group that you can get together with to survive any of these scenarios, including a viral pandemic outbreak. If you want to survive this, don't depend on the government. The government's efforts so far in this Ebola fight have been nothing more than elaborate theater. I mean, Obama sent 3,000 troops over to Africa, and they've got a couple of bulldozers, and they are bulldozing some land to build some shelters, to house some cots. And by the time they're done with this, a few months down the road, they're going to have maybe 1,500 cots. And meanwhile, the virus will have exploded to like 150,000 infections. So this effort by the U.S. military is really just elaborate theater. It's designed to achieve a political goal, which is to make it appear as if the United States is very compassionate and very proactive and taking steps to try to halt the transmission of this disease. In reality, it's all a cruel joke. It's all elaborate theater, and there are some, including scientists in Liberia, who actually believe that it was the Department of Defense that bioengineered this Ebola virus and intentionally released it, and has been using African children for medical experiments for many, many years. That was published in the Liberian Observer, I believe, front page news. Over there, you won't find that, you won't hear that on CNN. So even if there's an outbreak in the United States, remember that much of what the government will do to try to respond to that is elaborate theater. It's designed to create the impression that they're doing something, while in reality, they're headed for their bunkers. You know, they've got their food supplies, their bunkers. Yeah, they'll throw a few thousand soldiers in your direction to try to act like they're doing something, but in reality, you are on your own. And also in reality, so are the soldiers. You know, that's the other element in all this. All these frontline soldiers, or if there's a domestic outbreak in the U.S., maybe they would be state guard troops or national guard troops. How are these soldiers supposed to not get infected? Are they all going to walk around out there in the heat with biohazard suits? Do they even have that many biohazard suits? Do the soldiers have any training in how to wear protective gear and how to not become a victim of viral transmission? No, soldiers aren't trained in that. Soldiers are trained in lots of other skills, you know, kinetic warfare types of skills and logistics skills, communications, tactics and strategy, but they're not trained to fight a war with a strand of DNA. They're not trained to win a war against a virus. In fact, their weapons are useless against a virus. You can shoot your M4 rifle at a virus all day long. The virus just laughs it off because it's got a million more or a billion more copies that it can come at you with the second you stop shooting. So don't expect any information from the government to be very helpful. If you want to survive a pandemic like this, you need to take steps yourself, so that you have the knowledge, the skills, whatever supplies might be necessary to be able to survive this pandemic on your own, counting on absolutely no help from the government whatsoever. And if there is some help that arrives, then you can be pleasantly surprised. Maybe some guardsmen show up with extra food and water. You know, maybe they will be helpful to some extent, but don't count on it, because chances are they're not going to be there for you. And chances are you're going to have to take care of yourself. And that's why I recorded this course. This entire course, Pandemic Preparedness, this is about giving the individuals the skills, the knowledge that they need to survive what looks like may be coming, even if the government itself is completely incapable of responding to your needs. And keep in mind that if this outbreak begins to spread to multiple cities, federal resources will be stretched so thin that it's basically you can count on not getting any significant help at all anyway. Now, to wrap this up, think about the aftermath of a pandemic burning through a population like the United States population, 300 million people. And let's say that Ebola gets loose, breaks out of containment, and burns through the population. You can expect some kind of mortality rate, probably between 20% to 60% across the nation. So, you know, that could be quite literally, you could be talking about, what is that, 60 million people dead on the low end and maybe 180 million people dead on the high end. That is a lot. That's a horrendous cost. I mean, that's the kind of event that would change history forever. It's almost unthinkable. I can't even really cognitively grasp what that would mean. But you can bet that society would be completely different. It may collapse the government that we know today. It may cause secession of states. Texas may become its own nation. There may be a massive decentralization of power out of Washington into local regions. Just a reshaping of the political or the geopolitical landscape because of the massive tragic loss of life caused by Ebola. So there could be enormous changes that no one can even predict today that could take place because of this. One of the most likely scenarios that I am publicly predicting is that if there is a global pandemic outbreak, that it itself could catalyze or initiate a global financial collapse, because the Ebola medical crisis could cause massive loss of life, isolation, quarantines, activities like that shut down commerce, that shut down economic productivity, that put incredible strains on the banking system, which is already very fragile and on the precipice of a massive global crash, just the way it is. Someone online even suggested to me recently, I can't say I agree with this, but they suggested that Ebola had been released as a cover story to provide an excuse for the global financial debt collapse that was now inevitable. That's an interesting theory. I don't know if that's true, but I can certainly see Ebola, if it burns through a population, I can certainly see it causing economic hell, as the Washington Post has now described Liberia. And economic hell could result in banking failures, economic crashes, massive loss of even national currencies, loss of savings. We could see the global derivatives debt pyramid unravel and collapse, which could have just tragic consequences across the banking system. So don't think that the Ebola problem is only about Ebola. This is not simply a medical question. This is really a question of how could Ebola sweeping through a large complex society, how could it reshape that society and cause the implosion or the downfall of other systems of that society, which are dependent on very complex, specialized systems of human knowledge and human effort. If you lose 20 to 60% of the population, you are going to have a massive restructuring of many, many systems in any kind of a complex society. And the United States of America and the United Kingdom, for example, are all very specialized, highly complex societies. We are not simple, low-tech, agrarian societies like Papua New Guinea. We are highly specialized, complex societies, which means that we are especially vulnerable, more so than low-tech countries. We are especially vulnerable to systemic failures of the complexities of our systems. And there are, of course, entire books written about this. I think Jared Diamond has some interesting titles on this. I don't remember the titles offhand, but one about how civilization fails. I guess I'll have to look at the titles, but there's a lot of academic study into this, and the conclusion is that when highly specialized complex societies are subjected to systemic stresses, that the fragile nature of their interdependent complexities very quickly unravels and causes systemic domino effect types of collapses that can lead actually to the extinction of that civilization. So that's something to really think about here. Ebola could be something that literally, quite literally, ends the United States of America as we know it today as a geopolitical entity. It could cause a restructuring of society as we know it, of in fact, entire human civilization. So I'm going to end this now, but I hope I've opened your mind to some areas of investigation and some thought of where this could actually go. This is about more than just staying prepared medically. This is about more than, you know, survival and medical preparedness. This is also about thinking, considering the really long-term implications of how a simple fragment of proteins, RNA and DNA, can literally reshape human civilization. It is not an exaggeration. It's a very important point for us all to consider. So thank you for listening to this course. My name is Mike Adams. I'm the Health Ranger, and this is biodefense.com.